So there's definitely a shift in what's happening, which is, you know, I wish I could say, you know, it is because, and that I don't know. You know, we have more enrollment in some areas, and we have drastic loss in other areas. But we're looking, you know, we have a pilot program at the hospital in Ellenville, which we'll bring in, you know, starting in about a month. Then we have a late start program. So we're trying a lot of different unique things. And I think we're going to be okay. I'm giving you the rosy part, then Jamie's going to give you the bad part. So it's again, it's an interesting year. And, you know, we, on a high note though, the chamber recognized us as the business of the year, which really was a true surprise. You know, I didn't expect anything like that. So, you know, the community support has been overwhelming. You know, we're feeling good. You know, there's no cases. We're doing extremes amount of testing and monitoring, and Jamie can get into some of that. The unfortunate part of that is SUNY has required more of a testing protocol than we had originally had planned. So when they institute those additional programs, it just, there's no funds to help those. So it's going to cost us another almost $90,000 to do the extended testing that they're requiring. Even if, you know, we haven't had a case and there doesn't seem to be, but I guess it could happen anyway. So anyway, we're looking okay. I'm feeling confident. You know, we're looking forward to the spring. We're going to start our enrollment for the fall. Actually, we started, I think, last week. So, you know, that, or not for the fall, for WinterNet. WinterNet is, you know, we'll probably bring in 15 to 20 FTE, but it was like the summer. There's like this real surprise that we had huge enrollment in our summertime. Then we took a dip in the fall. So, you know, we're anticipating maybe, you know, some good things coming with the winter program. So a lot of unknowns, but we're moving along. You know, the general feel and the morale is okay, you know, based on, you know, a lot of peculiar things that happen on a daily basis. I think we'll get through this fine. So, and again, the legislative support's been overwhelming. So thank you for all you do. We certainly appreciate that. I'll let Jamie talk a little bit about the finances, which is more of a challenge.
Right, so thanks, Dr. Al. Similar to the county, you know, we're still expecting a potential 20% reduction on state aid. We have to put that we're pretty much on pause, as the state keeps saying they don't want to call it a cut. They want us to keep characterizing it as a pause in funding. But again, as Dr. Al said, as we go through this upcoming year, cash flow is going to have to be monitored very closely with that potential state aid reduction. So budgetarily, we did anticipate that and we budgeted accordingly. But again, we have to monitor that throughout the course of the upcoming year. We still haven't received the 20% on our prior year fourth quarter payment. SUNY has indicated that if the federal government does come in with state plan to, or funding for the state, sorry, that they will provide that funding back to us. So we're still hopeful that that will happen. We've heard now from the state that everything is on pause pending the federal election. So that's still up in the air at this point, obviously, puts us in a situation where we just have to really closely monitor all of our cash flow situations. And as Dr. Al said, we have testing. We're mandated to do testing now. We have to test 50% of our population, of our on-site population, on a weekly basis. So we're working with SUNY Upstate Medical to get that off the ground and have all of our students tested. Initially, we did testing with Health Alliance. We didn't have any positive test results through that testing. And that did help us create kind of our baseline testing data when we first opened. So that did give us comfort that we were opening with a safe restart plan. So that's where we are. Again, we'll certainly be providing updates, you know, as we get them on the finance side. Any questions?
Anyone? No? All right. Well, thank you both and best
thank
of luck.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Again, appreciate all you guys do.
Jim, there's Paul O on our meeting. Paul, what's your last name?
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm Paul Ostrander. I'm from Mid-Hudson News. I'm just sitting in as an observer.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Welcome, Paul. All right, we'll do the 2021 budget reviews now. First up is Youth Bureau. Nina Dawson.
Yes, hi, thank you all for having me. Jamie's comments were so familiar. Waiting and wondering is kind of the way of the world right now, especially with state funding. But I wanted to just give you just a quick overview of what what the Youth Bureau's been actually faced with. Everybody's been faced with something because of COVID. It sounds like a record that we're all playing. So at the onset of COVID, normally the Youth Bureau would have been reviewing applications. We were, as a matter of fact, reviewing applications for the 2020 year, which is just a process that we go through in January. And then February, we're still reviewing and we're setting up interviews. And as COVID really became apparent, everything was put on pause, just like to echo what Jamie was saying with some of her funding information. So the state, everybody in the state, just like us in the county, were kind of figuring out how to process this whole new pandemic and how we were going to go about it. We were at that time waiting for our a portion of our funding for our Youth Bureau programs from 2019, and that is still kind of in the mix. It's a definite, but we're still waiting for that. So as for 2021, we have been faced with, just like everyone else that is getting any kind of funding from the state, we're waiting for, after the election, we'll have our definites. We've been advised that we definitely will get funding, but we don't have any figures to actually give definites. So what we've done, I am affiliated with the Hudson Valley Youth Bureau Association, it goes from Sullivan County, Ulster, Orange, Dutchess, right down to Westchester County. We have an association because it gives us strength when we're actually dealing with the state on issues like this and many other things. So we've all been meeting, waiting, hoping one of us had information and the other one and the others just didn't know about it, but we're all kind of in the same place. We're waiting to find out what the actual figure is. One of the benefits for us is that the state is very, very big on youth programs. So I'm confident that we are going to get the assistance that we deserve, but we don't know what that figure is going to be because of COVID. So currently what we're doing is just continuing our regular processes. The youth board has reviewed the programs that have requested funding support by us. We've actually accepted the programs. We're just doing the contract portion of things now, and then we will be hopefully, by the time our contracts are sort of in place and waiting for the exact figure, we will be able to complete the process. Things are behind because of this weight gain that we're actually all doing, but there's not much more that we can do. So I'm confident, I'm positive, because that's the only way I can continue to do this. I would like to just give you guys some information on what we've been doing in the interim of this waiting game, if that's okay.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to make my screen a little smaller because I actually took some really good notes here. So basically, at the onset of COVID, we had to stop our programs that were kind of getting ready to start up and get going place just like everyone else. And as a result of stopping those programs, other things came out of this whole pandemic. Like, how do we assure that the youth that are normally in safe place programs that we actually fund, how do we make sure that they're safe? How do we make sure that they are in an environment that is not going to endanger their quality of life? So I met with several of my key programs, and we actually started, they started doing virtual programming, which was probably the hottest thing for this whole summer. Everybody's been doing virtual programming. And by interacting with them on a daily basis, it kind of put youth that are possibly in dangerous situations, whether it's at home or a caretaker, it puts them in a position where we are actually still involved with their day-to-day activities. So I like to think that we actually still had a way of creating a safe space for at least a portion of their day. So in the middle of the summer, we were actually still waiting for the state to tell us if we could actually open for summer programming, which is very key for students that are out of school for the summer. And that had a lot of people concerned in programs that really genuinely care about these kids, like the Boys and Girls Club, the Hodge Center, Rondout Neighborhood Center. They are key organizations in this community that actually continuously, year after year, watch kids grow in their programs. So they were actually dispersing food, just like many of the other organizations throughout the community. I think through bad things, we sometimes see some of the most beautiful things. We saw organizations that normally do youth programs actually provide lunches and warm dinners for these kids in place of their school lunches that they would have actually gotten. A lot of collaborations occurred during the pandemic, and I'm very proud of that. I'm really glad that people come together in a crisis. So many of the programs collaborated to make sure that these kids that we knew were not going to be fed properly were being fed. And also some of the programs, the Youth Bureau and the Ulster County Human Rights Commission got together to provide PPEs for many of the areas of disparity. In my neighborhood, I would go to the store and get gas and nobody had masks on. So I was like, you know, we got to do something about this. So we actually went out in what we considered the trenches and set up tables and social distancing and got people to understand the severity of this, because many people in these areas don't, and they didn't for a long time. So providing PPEs out there in the areas that were desperately in need was very important. And the county executive was good enough to secure a great supply. We even went into churches and the Latino community, which are very private. So we had a lot of youth programs that were kind of doing much more than youth by getting involved in the community and making people as safe as we possibly can. And I truly believe that this is why our numbers were not as bad as other places. So I'm glad about that. What we have actually been trying to do, thank goodness we have a great finance department. Bert and his team helped me to try to assess a way of looking at my budget to see if we could cut corners. And what I ended up doing was I cut back on all my supplies. So whatever we had is what we're dealing with. This is what we're going to work with for the next who knows how long. So we've been pinching and not using paper and doing more by email and, you know, just cutting corners where we can to make sure that we are going to kind of be braced for what the state might come back to us for. One of the things I'm really, really proud of, I don't know if the legislative team is aware of the Brighter Futures Initiative. The Brighter Futures Initiative is a program that is under the Youth Bureau now, and is a program that actually specifically deals with youth that are the most at risk. So in a community, we talk about disparities, youth living with disparities. These are youth that are probably on the brink of taking that path that could totally change their life. And what we actually do is we connect them with services. We actually do all kinds of different things that allow people to allow them to possibly have a positive path as opposed to the path that they're currently on because of generational poverty. And we all know that the way it works. So what we've been trying to do with Brighter Futures is to give solutions to sometimes what looks like hopeless situations. And I have, I'm very happy to say that this year, we have three success stories. We took three youth that made their initial milestone. And that milestone was to graduate high school, which is a very, very big deal. Because I want to actually just discuss the three, if that's okay. If you guys, is that okay?
Please do, yes.
Okay, so I have three names of three kids that are, I'm sorry, young adults that are amazing. I think the support that was given by Brighter Futures changed their path, I'd like to think. The first one is Jaden Smith. Jaden came from a status of previously being institutionalized at a very young age. She was incarcerated at one point at a very young age. She wasn't enrolled in school, and with the support of Brighter Futures Initiative, we actually got her to look at how getting back in the path of high school graduation, how that would actually encourage her. Can you stay there for 1 second, please? How high school graduation would actually supplement her future in more powerful ways than she would ever understand at that point. So Jaden went on, graduated high school, and because she realized that she was successful at doing something she didn't think she could, she went on to enroll in Ulster Community College, which she's very excited about. She's in her first semester. We helped her with financial aid paperwork and all kinds of things. So, and Jaden's dream is to become an entrepreneur. She wants to run a restaurant. So through the Brighter Futures Initiative, we were able to do a paid internship so that she can actually work with one of our community stakeholders. They're going to pay a portion of her salary. We will pay a portion of it through the Brighter Futures Initiative. And she's going to learn what it takes to run a restaurant. So kudos to Jaden. I'm really happy about her. Jaden lives in Kingston. Tanzimal Islam is the next youth that I'd like to talk about. He lives in Ellenville. We currently have 10 youth in Ellenville and 10 in Kingston because they were our base. They were our two towns that needed it the most. We started out with 20 complete, and now we just now added 10 more in each city, and Ellenville and Kingston. So, and that's because we had such success with the support from kids that sometimes didn't even want to talk to us initially. So Tanzimal's story is, he comes from a religious background and had strong beliefs that caused some complications in his relationship with his parent. His parents are old school, he's new school, he's trying to actually muddle his way through the educational system, not really confident in himself. And Tanzimal thought that he would never make it to 12th grade, much less high school. Tanzimal's parents are very, very strict, and a lot of what he wanted to get into, they didn't allow him to. So in a very careful way, we were able to navigate through his issues with his parents because of their religious background, and we still were able to support him so that we could kind of encourage his doubtfulness. We took him from a kid that barely made eye contact with us, and now we were actually trying to get him a sign like the kids have for graduation signs. He was afraid for us to get one for him. He kept saying, I'm not going to graduate. Don't get the sign. We were like, Tanzimal, you're going to graduate. So he couldn't believe it. I knew he could do it. I'm so proud that he did do it. And from there, Tanzimal decided to go. He was looking to be employed because his family needed the money. So he's actually he graduated with great grades, and he's employed with New Horizons in Ellenville. So really proud of him. He's a very shy kid that is actually starting to see what his capabilities are. So, and we stay in touch with them in this program. It does not stop with high school graduation or their first semester in college. We follow them for 4 years. So this is a magnificent pilot that we're doing. I'm really glad that I'm involved with this. The third one is Philip Marshall. Philip Marshall came from a very, very bare environment. His family, he didn't have anyone. So Philip fit into the category of runaway and homeless youth. He's a kid that actually could have actually chose the street and selling drugs because he didn't actually have anybody. But thank goodness we actually grabbed him. That wasn't really his makeup. So he kind of made it easier for us to guide him. And we actually collaborated. This is where collaborations are so important. Brighter Futures collaborated with Transitional Living, which is one of the Youth Bureau's bigger programs. It's one of all the programs are important, but this one is very key because a kid that is actually considered a runaway and homeless youth, we can actually give them temporary housing to kind of stabilize them so that they can actually make it through the school year. This is very, very key, this program, and how we collaborated the two. So Philip graduated high school, much to his amazement. He's very quiet. We had to pull things out of him. And his path that he chose after graduating was he enlisted in the United States Army, and he's right now doing basics in North Carolina. So I'm really proud of the three of them. I actually use them to encourage the others that are still in the program. This is what can happen. These are just the beginning of your possibilities. So we're interviewing our new 10 for both Kingston and Ellenville, and I'm very enthusiastic. This year, we're actually taking on tougher kids even. And many of them are in situations where they live in welfare hotels. They don't have Wi-Fi. So our task is very, very, it's crazy with COVID, but it's even crazier because the situation that they're in, they're already a month behind some of them. So we're going to succeed. I don't care what it is. We're going to make it happen. So there it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Nina.
Yeah, thank you.
Does anyone have a question for Nina? No. My only question is, how many youth did you were enrolled in your programs during the course of the summer?
Oh my goodness, I can tell you, most of the kids, we had a few that didn't actually comply with the virtual because turns out there's a learning lesson in everything. Some kids really don't like virtual. They do better face-to-face, and I actually learned that that's probably because of their lifestyle and their setup. They're not comfortable being in you know, on a screen with a screen in front of them. And that's kind of a downfall too. We probably had about 1,000 kids enrolled in all our programs, a little bit more. And it was all virtual for the summer.
Yes, Legislator Archer.
Thank you. On the virtual, was it because they didn't have internet or they didn't have access? I mean, I know they may have said they're not comfortable, but I'm wondering if it was a matter of cost or not having access to online capability.
There's multiple reasons. What we did was we actually helped some with computers. We actually, we knew we were going to go in the direction of community-based organizations having safe places eventually when COVID lifted. So we actually let some computers out. The school was very, very involved in getting computers to youth. So it was a combination, but they just don't, they didn't like it because their setup is not like, it's not an environment that they can actually, that's conducive for doing programming. For programs like the Boys and Girls Club, the Hodge Center, Rondo Neighborhood Center, they were very involved because they like the people that work at these places. They're used to being around them. So they were doing TikTok and things that were actually appealing to the kids. You have to actually grab their attention and keep it for the time that you're actually going to do virtual programming. The other teams, older teams that were actually, they were in troubled situations, kind of didn't. So I actually started a girls group. I was a part of a girls group, I apologize, to try to angle how we can actually get them involved too, just to see, you know, what their situations were and to give them a safe place event. So
it was more about their home environment and being, so it is, had you thought about having places where they could go and still have access virtually?
Well, that's a great question. That's where we are now. So now that school is not actually in session for certain grades, everything's being done virtual, especially for the situations where the hotels are involved. The hotels are not, the reception, their Wi-Fi doesn't work. So although they're supposed to have it, it really doesn't work. So we're trying to get them, I have a McKinney-Vento liaison, the school has a McKinney-Vento liaison that can provide transportation from these hotels to these community-based organizations like CCE, the new building on Cedar Street, is one of the key places that we're going to be working with. I have mentors, my brother's keeper mentors that are going to be working, that are working with CCE to kind of guide the kids and keep them, you know, focused when they're actually in these classroom settings. So they have computers there. It's much easier to get their attention because they're in a place that's much more comfortable than the hotel or their home environment. So
how many kids did that impact? Just, do you have a number?
Well, you mean currently with the current education status right now?
How many kids were impacted from participating in the summer program because of the issues we just spoke about?
You know, I don't have an exact number. I won't try to pick one. But I know that there was a substantial number because I was chasing a lot of them. I was speaking to parents, speaking to the kids, trying to figure out different ways. And they were like, who's this crazy lady that's trying to motivate us? We don't want to be motivated. There's COVID out there. There's all these different things. It was a very weird time to motivate kids, but I'm relentless. I'm relentless. So, and some of the parents could have cared less. So it was easy for the kids to just relax on as far as being involved. And then there were parents that were like thrilled that we were actually in the picture. So those were the ones that I actually had more success with. The ones that where the parents couldn't care, I would knock on their door. I was going to the hotel and knocking on doors in the morning. And they'd be like, we're asleep, leave us alone. So, I mean, it was a very different time, but I think overall, having the programming was very, very successful.
Thank you, Nina.
Do you think you, do you think you could ballpark that, not now, but get back to the committee on roughly how many?
Definitely. Okay. I'll do it through my programs. I'll actually see which students that they actually tried to pull in did not actually respond.
Probably in the sink.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Perry, you sound like my house. I'm like, don't move. I'm in a meeting. This is our new world, right?
Well, again, thank you, Nina. Great yes. job. And yeah, I think we'd all be interested in hearing more about your progress. Office of the for the Aging, Susan.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hi, everyone.
Hello there.
I have some notes about what we did, although I think I've met with you all a couple of times over the summer. You may have heard that we sort of embarked on our own Feed Ulster County, echoing what Nina was saying about feeding and spreading around the PPS and trying to help the people that we serve as best we could. We had, certainly for the legislators who haven't heard, as soon as things shut down and Governor Cuomo put in his Matilda's Law, which was anybody over 70 really shouldn't, you know, leave their house or go into public. We don't know what's happening. We got a lot of frantic calls about, I don't have any food. I can't order from ShopRite and get it delivered anymore. I can't go shopping. My son lives out of town, you know, a lot of things. So we just started making a list of people who needed food or shopping. And very briefly, we had two aides we just hired 3 weeks before that, and they became our drivers for about 4.5 months, delivering to about 275 people a week, five frozen meals. All of it was paid for through a nice sofa grant that we got. We stopped at the end of August. By then, the stores were all doing their delivery programs again. Most of the restaurants were open for takeout. And people started dropping off the list a few every week. So I thought this would be a good time. Plus we didn't have any more money. And although our own aides went back to work probably in beginning of August, we were helped, which was really helpful, by the Department of Social Service drivers for about a month and a half. That was really great, and some volunteers, but they went back to work. So I didn't really have any way to get the meals around. Altogether, we served probably about 320 people who were not our regular clients. This whole time that we did this, we were serving our regular clients as well. They were picking up meals. Obviously the congregate meal sites all closed down right away, and they have not been reopened. The folks that were congregate folks pick up meals once a week on a day from one of the sites. There's only three of them delivering, having meals right now: Ellenville, Saugerties, and Rosendale. And the rest of the folks turned into once a week recipients of frozen meals from Gateway. And that seems to be working okay. There was only a couple people who really pitched a fit about ending that whole process. So we kept them on. We were able to also get about 20,000 or so masks from NYSOFA, and we had about 5 or 6 mask giveaways around the county in different places. Ellenville, down in Gardner, I think, in that area, out by Shandaken, a couple of in Kingston. That went pretty well. We were also able over the last month and a half to hand out many, but not all, of our farmers market coupons, giving the seniors some discounts for fresh fruits and vegetables at some of the markets. People were calling us in June saying, I'm bored. what can you do? So we came up with, of course, Zoom projects for them. So we had three or four educational, we're still doing this, three or four educational things a week, sorry, a month. And our Tai Chi instructor had been doing Zoom Tai Chi. So she said, I would love to do this. So we set those up. And we had, I think, a beginning class and a continuing class going on at the same time. That's still going on. So that's all been going on since June. So at least we were able to sort of engage them somehow. I started having meetings with the SIP groups and some of the senior leaders just to see what's going on with them and if there's anything we can do within our constraints to help. We've had two meetings now, I think. Judy and I had a senior leader meeting, sort of a mini summit a few weeks ago, and they gave me some ideas. So I'm having like a coffee and conversation with them once a week. Open to anybody, but I usually focus on different regions. So if they have issues in their own region, maybe I can address something that affects all of them. Some of the things that we did, you may or may not know of, to reduce our expenses this year, is we did go through our budget and sort of, you know, hacked where we could. Like Nina, we're not using supplies, we're lots less mileage. The case managers aren't going out and seeing people, so there is quite a bit less mileage, both personal and county car-wise. As you know, the county had put together a really nice retirement package, and one of our case managers who had talked about retirement decided to go. So she left at the beginning of September. We are not filling that position. We had a part-time contracted New York Connect staff that we didn't fill. And we had 30% of an age-friendly grant position went unfilled because that 30% was the county responsibility. So we didn't fill that either. Although, interestingly enough, Judy and I decided to continue with the grant as if we were getting the money. So we've been going to the meetings. They're all virtual, but some of them are very long. Going to the meetings, doing the updates. We've just put together, which we'll send to Tim, a whole sort of up-to-date where we are with Ulster County being age-friendly and people-friendly in a lot of different areas. So I can certainly share that with you if you'd like to see it. And I think those were the main reductions. Oh, no conferences. We did get an extra car from the fleet to allow the aides to have enough vehicles to not use their own. No extra senior activities, no extra events. We haven't been doing any lunch and learns. I had such a wonderful year planned. It was, you know, incredibly disappointing. I talked about the home delivered meals and the congregates. We've had all of our meetings through Zoom. Most of our staff meetings, there's very little staff travel. There's very little staff in the office. Still, I would say on a busy day, there might be six of us there. So trying to keep distancing as a minute at a maximum and people at a minimum. But we do have open enrollment coming up. You know, the calendar marches on despite COVID, and Medicare's open enrollment is a huge thing for the seniors. So we wanted to find a way to be able to meet folks in person, because some of the things that our counselors do just cannot be done through the phone. They have to sit down with someone, they have to show them the screen, they have to go through their Part D medications and their Part B options and their Part A options. It's really complicated. So we set up two big sort of cubicles in the senior hub. We're using that for that. People can go in, they're about 20 feet apart each, and they're sort of got at least two walls, they're separated by a barrier. And there's one office in our office, in our main office, that can also be used, also a great big deep office with barriers. So legal can meet with them, because again, there's some things that have to be done in person. And we are seeing a little uptick in people coming to the office, and so far so good. We're trying to rack our brains for something that can be done where folks can do something outside. It's getting colder, so that's a little bit more difficult, but it's really tough with this population. They are playing bingo, I found out. You know, bingo never dies. And at the senior center in the town of Kingston, they're gathering on Mondays. And I went in there, what's today, Tuesday? I went in there yesterday to deliver some buzzes just to kind of pop in. And they were all being good. They all had their masks on. They all were separated at tables. But bingo lives on. So I'm glad that they were able to sort of work that out themselves. So we'll see. They are wanting to do the congregate meals again, but it's just... It's a huge burden on everybody to be able to have to do that. And I think the whole way you do that belies the whole idea of why you do it. And they'd have to wear masks when they get up. They can't congregate. They can't chat. Probably most of the places are small enough where they'd have to have two shifts instead of one. So everybody has to leave. They can't sit around and chat. Everything has to be cleaned. I mean, it's just... it's not an attractive, cozy setting. Let's put it that way.
Okay, I want to be sensitive to time here. So all right, does anyone have any questions of Susan? No? All right, well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Yes. Mark, do you want to chime in with respect to the veterans?
Yeah, I apologize. Mark is not available to come tonight. So Jim and I talked earlier, and I talked to Nettie this morning. And so we're going to push that off till next month. So thank you. I could have presented the budget, but it looks like time-wise would have been short anyway. And I know next month's meeting is still within the time frame for you all to do that. I am here to talk on the one resolution with veterans, so happy to do that.
And Jim, we have another caller. The phone number ends in 1151. Caller, could you identify yourself, please?
Oh, yeah, this is Patricia Dossie with the Daily Freeman.
Okay, thanks, Patricia.
Thank you. All right, so let's move on to resolutions. We'll do resolution 347, approving the execution of a contract for $108,900 entered into by the county and Kingston Works, a division of Health Alliance Hospital, Broadway Campus, Office of the Aging. Can I get a motion?
I'll move it.
A second?
A second.
Second.
All right. Any discussion?
You all know what that is?
I just had one quick question.
Sure.
So in the resolution, it says Kingston Works, but in the contract itself, it's called something else, Connect Program or something?
New York Connects.
Yeah, what's the relationship between Kingston Works and New York Connect?
So the folks that work for us as contractors in the office, there's two of them, are paid through Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley through this contract, through Kingston Works for New York Connect staff. I'm sorry if that's confusing, but.
That's okay, I didn't see Kingston Works anywhere in the actual contract itself, so I was confused.
I'm pretty sure that's sort of their administrative part, because we have another sort of section that works out of them too. It's the same guy, his name is Matt Osterhout. Those Dutch names, that kind of manages about three of our different contractors that we have in the office. So the money flows through them. They supply us with the contractors. They supervise the contractors, but they work in our office full time.
Thank you, Susan.
Yep.
Anyone else have a question? If not, I'll call for, did someone say something? No. I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Well, that resolution passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on, any new business?
Oh, sorry, Jim, 346. Yes. Resolution 346.
I thought we were going to this thing.
Yes, aren't we going to wait until next month for that?
No, 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 just the budget presentation. I'm here to talk.
To speak to the resolution?
Yeah, I'm here to speak.
I apologize.
Yep.
Okay, well, resolution 346, approving the execution of a contract for $75,000 entered into by the county and Soldier On, Inc., Veteran Services. Mark, do you want to speak to this?
Sure, I can. Do you need to make a motion to discuss first?
Yes. Do I have a motion to discuss? Yeah. Okay, second?
Second.
Okay. Thanks. So this is our contract for the operations of the Patriots Project. So, you know, we own the Patriots Project house, but they do all of the administrative work. This is an ongoing contract. The only difference is that we're doing a 5-year contract in this instance. So it's a larger amount than you're used to seeing, but it's just the difference of a 1 year to a 5-year. They've been the contractor the entire time. And so it just makes sense to have a little bit more longevity on the contract.
All right. Thank you. All right. Call for a vote.
I had a question.
Yes, please.
So, Mark, in the contract itself, in the scope of services, I was just really curious that one of the criteria for receiving the service is that you have to be a male. What's the reasoning for that?
That is a good question. I can let me follow up with that. I think it's basically group housing. I believe that the home was established just for that purpose. I can follow up
just didn't make sense to me. I mean, there's so many female veterans that why are they excluded from this program?
Right? Yeah, I think it just has to do with the quarters, the housing quarters. But
all right,
Jim,
any other questions?
I just have a question, if I may, yep. Chairman. We typically don't go out 5 years, so I was curious as to why. I mean, typically it's 3 to 4 years. Why we're going out 5? I was just curious.
Yeah, I mean, so again, they have been the contractor for the entire time. I think the veterans just decided the director working with the contractor just thought that longevity would make more sense to establish. You know, they have other funding sources. They're a nonprofit organization. It's just helpful for them to have a contract. We're into probably, I want to say the 6th or so year of this program. And I think that we're comfortable with them. They're the only ones that step up and want to administer the program, and they've requested the longer contract.
So typically in the past, it's been one year. Right.
Renew
so
year.
And they're supplying services as needed within the up to this amount, correct?
Correct.
So my only concern is they are happy with the service, and we do have an out if in fact they're not performing down the road, correct? We still have our typical 30-day notice?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. All right. I didn't see it, so I just wanted to make sure. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that passes. Any new or old business from anyone? John, you'll see that the committee members no longer includes the chair.
I only brought that up just to make sure if there was something.
Yes.
So well, we're paying attention. You didn't get bogged down in it, that's all.
We're listening to you, John.
Yeah, right. Oh, God. Don't say that.
All right. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Yeah, so moved.
All right.
Second.
All right. Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you. See you.
Okay. Bye now.
Night.